Shada had held out the hope that, like certain other criminal dens she'd heard of, the cantina's interior would be a marked improvement over its exterior. But it wasn't. From the dark, smoke-filled lobby and flickering droid detector to the curved bar and secluded booths along the walls, the cantina was as shabby as some of the less choice tap cafes on their own world. Caroli had been right. Being number one on Tatooine wasn't saying much. "Watch the steps," Caroli murmured beside her. "Thanks." Shada caught herself in time not to trip over the steps leading down from the lobby to the main part of the cantina. She hadn't realized until then just how much her eyes were having to adjust from the bright sunlight outside to the dimness of the interior. Probably deliberately designed to give those already inside a chance to check out any newcomers. But if any of the patrons were overly curious about her and Caroli, they weren't showing it. Around the room, humans and aliens of all sorts were sitting or squatting at the tables and booths or leaning against the bar, drinking a dozen different liquids and chatting in a dozen different languages, and not paying the least bit of attention to the new arrivals. Apparently, the Tawnica sisters were familiar enough to the clientele to be known on sight. Or else minding one's own business was the general rule here. Either way, it suited Shada just fine. "What now?" Caroli asked. "Let's go over to the bar." Shada nodded to an empty spot against one side. "We can see the room better from there than from a table or booth. We'll get a drink and see if we can find anyone from our listings." They made their way through the general flow of bodies to the bar. Across the room, a Bith band was belting out some bouncy but otherwise nondescript tune, the music not quite able to drown out the mix of conversations. Partway around the bar, a tall, not quite human, was smoking from an oddly shaped loop pipe and gazing off broodingly into space. Beyond him, an aquilish and a badly scarred man were drinking and glaring around at other customers. Beyond them, another tall human was holding a quiet conversation with an even taller Wookiee.
"What do you have?"
Shada focused on the bartender, standing there in front of them. The expression on his face matched his voice, but there seemed to be some recognition behind the indifference in his eyes, enough to risk an experiment. "We'll have the usual," she told him. He grunted and busied himself at the bar. Shada glanced at Caroli's suddenly aghast expression, winked reassuringly, and turned back as the bartender put two slender glasses in front of them. He grunted again and walked away. Shada picked up her glass, willing the tension to flow out of her. "Cheers," she lifted the glass to Caroli.
"Are you crazy?"
"Would you rather I'd ordered something way out of character for us?" Shada took a careful sip. Some kind of Solustan wine, she decided. "Let's get started." Still glowering, Caroli pulled the slender cylinder of their spy's scanner data pad from her jumpsuit and flicked it on. "All right," she muttered, glancing back and forth between it and the cantina's patrons. "The fellow with the loop pipe. Oh, never mind. He's an assassin. Those two Duros over there. Huh. No listing here for them." "Their flight suits look too neat for smugglers anyway," Shada said. Across the bar, an old man with white hair and beard and dressed in a brown robe stepped up to the Wookiee and his tall companion. There was a short conversation between the two humans, and then the tall human gestured to the Wookiee and wandered away. "What about that aquilish over there?" "I was just checking him," Caroli said, peering down at the end of the scanner. "Name's Pondo Baba, and he's definitely a smuggler. That Scarface beside him..."
"Hey!"
the bartender barked. Shada stiffened, her hand reaching reflexively for her hidden knife. But the bartender wasn't looking at her.
"We don't serve their kind here," he snapped, gesturing sharply.
"What?" came a voice from behind her. Shada turned around. At the top of the steps stood a boy, about her own age, dressed in loose white clothing and frowning in puzzlement at the bartender. Beside him were two droids, a protocol droid and an astromech unit, similar to Kai's D4 model.
"You're droids," the bartender growled. "They'll have to wait outside. We don't want them here."
The kid spoke briefly to the droids, who turned and scurried back out. Continuing down the steps alone, he moved over to the bar and gingerly wedged himself in between the aquilish and the old man in the brown robe. The Scarface is named Dr. E. Vazin, Caroli said. I've got 12 death sentences listed here for him. For smuggling? Shada asked, frowning at the brown-robed old man. There was something about him, some sense of quiet alertness and self-control and power that set the hairs tingling on the back of her neck. No, botched surgical experiments. Yuck. We'll keep him in mind as a last resort. Shada's eyes and thoughts still were on the brown-robed man. Whoever he was, he definitely didn't fit in with the rest of the clientele. An Imperial spy, perhaps? That old man over there. Do a check on him, she told Caroli. The kid was still standing on his other side, gawking around like a tourist. Were they together? Grandfather and grandson, maybe, in from the countryside to see the big city? And then, abruptly, the Aquilish gave the kid a shove and snarled something at him. The kid looked at him blankly, then turned back to the bar. Stepping away from the bar, smiling rather like a predator preparing himself for lunch, Dr. E. Vazin tapped the kid on the shoulder.
He doesn't like you, he said.
Sorry, the kid breathed, starting to turn away again. E. Vazin grabbed a handful of the kid's clothing and yanked him back around.
I don't like you either,
he snarled, shoving his mangled face close to the kid's. Around them, conversations came to a halt as heads turned to look.
You just watch yourself. We're wanted men.
Uh-oh, Caroli said quietly. Shada nodded silently. The kid was in for it now. She'd seen enough Tapcafe fights to know a setup when she saw one. We're staying out of it, she reminded Caroli. But if they get arrested... Shada cut her off with a sharp gesture. Smoothly, gracefully, as if he'd been fully aware of the situation from the start, the old man had turned away from his conversation with the Wookiee. This little one's not worth the effort, he said soothingly to E. Vazin. Come, let me get you something. It was, Shada realized, as neat a face-saving gesture as she'd ever seen. E. Vazin and the Aquilish could now accept a drink, maybe snarl and posture a little more, and then move on with whatever passed for personal honor intact. But unfortunately for the old man, E. Vazin wasn't interested in a peaceful settlement. For a split second, he glared at the old man, his predator look hardening into something ugly and vicious. Conversation at the bar had all but ceased now, every eye turned toward the violence about to break. From their alcove, the band played on, oblivious to what was happening. And then, with a roar, E. Vazin shoved the kid violently to the side to crash into one of the tables. His hand swung up, a blaster gripped in it. Beside him, the Aquilish also had his blaster out. An urgent, no blasters, no blasters! From the bartender going completely unnoticed, the weapon swung up, targeting the old man. They never got there. Abruptly, the old man's hand exploded into brilliant blue-white light, a flickering, hard-edged fire that slashed with surgical precision across his two attackers. There was a blaster shot that ricocheted into the ceiling, a scream and gurgling roar. And then, as abruptly as it had begun, it was over. E. Vazin and the Aquilish collapsed out of sight beyond the bar, their moans showing they were at least temporarily still alive. From where she stood, Shada could see the Aquilish's blaster lying on the floor, still clutched in a hand no longer attached to its owner. For another moment, the old man remained as he was, his glowing weapon humming, his eyes flicking around the cantina as if assessing the possibility of more trouble. He could have saved himself the effort. From the casual way the other patrons were turning back to their drinks, it was obvious that no one here had any particular affection for the downed smugglers. At least, not enough to take on the old man over it. And it was in that second's worth of pause that Shada was finally able to identify the weapon the old man had used against his attackers. A lightsaber. You still want to know who he is? Caroli asked dryly from beside her. Shada licked at her lips, a fresh tingle running through her as the old man closed down his weapon and helped the kid back to his feet. A Jedi Knight. A real, living Jedi Knight. No wonder she'd sensed something odd about him. I doubt he's for hire, she told Caroli, taking a deep breath and forcing her mind back to the business at hand. If the Jedi Knights of the Old Republic had still been in power when their world was destroyed. Well, that eliminates Ivezan and the Aquilish, she said to Caroli. Keep looking. They spent the next few minutes sipping their drinks and surreptitiously scanning the room. Then spent a few minutes more talking to three of the most likely prospects, but to no avail. Two of the smugglers were already under contract, though one of them offered with a leer to take them along as passengers if they were nice to him. The third smuggler, an independent, was willing to talk, but made it clear that he wasn't planning to move his ship until this sudden imperial focus on Tatooine had calmed down. Great, Caroli grumbled as they returned to their previous spots at the bar. Now what? Shada looked around. A few new faces had come into the cantina since they'd begun their search, but most of them had the look about them of men who didn't want to be disturbed. She looked in turn at each of the booths lining the walls, wondering if they might have missed someone, and paused. There, right behind them, was the Jedi Knight and the kid, talking to the Wookiee and a man she hadn't seen come in. Check him out, she said, nodding toward the ladder. Caroli peered at the scanner readout. Name's Han Solo. Smuggler, does a lot of business with Jabba the Hutt. Put it away, quick. Shada was looking toward the cantina lobby. Caroli followed her gaze, and Shada felt her stiffen. Striding down the steps toward the bar, heavy weapons held at the ready were a pair of stormtroopers, who clearly weren't here for a drink. I wonder if there's a back door out of here, Caroli murmured. I don't know, Shada said, running a finger along her slender wine glass as the Imperial summoned the bartender over. Thrown against the face of a stormtrooper helmet, it ought to slow him down long enough for her to slide a knife blade into a critical junction. The bartender pointed somewhere behind them. Shada frowned, then understood. They must be asking about the Jedi Knight, she said, turning to look at the booth. A knot of aliens brushed past, momentarily blocking her view. They continued on. The old Jedi was gone. So was the kid. The stormtroopers stepped up to the booth, eyed Solo and the Wookiee a moment, and then moved on. For a moment, as they looked around, their armored masks seemed to pause on Shada and Caroli. But they said nothing, and continued on their way toward the rear of the cantina. Caroli nudged her. Now's our chance. Let's go talk to him. Shada turned back. Solo and the Wookiee had left the booth now, Solo heading for the lobby while the Wookiee went the direction the stormtroopers had gone. Probably where the back door was, which would explain how the Jedi and the kid had disappeared. Right. Shada took one last sip from her glass and put it back on the bar. She turned again, to find that Solo was no longer walking toward the lobby. He was instead backing into a booth at the wrong end of a blaster held by a dirty-looking Rodian. Uh-oh, Shada said. Friend of his? Doubt it, Caroli said, palming the scanner. Hang on, his name's Greedo. He's a bounty hunter. For a long moment, Shada stared at the quietly tense discussion in the booth, trying to decide what to do. Taking action would jeopardize her cover as Brea Tawnica, and certainly there was no shortage of smugglers in the cantina. But there was something about the way Solo carried himself that she liked. Or maybe the fact that he'd been talking with the Jedi Knight. I'm going to take him, she told Caroli. Get ready to back me up. She reached for her knife, but before she could draw it, Solo solved the problem on his own. From the booth came a flash of muffled blaster fire, and the Rodian slumped over onto the table. Warily, Solo slid out of the booth, holstered his blaster, and continued on toward the lobby, flipping a coin to the bartender as he passed. Caroli let out a breath. Good thing we weren't interested in Greedo. This isn't a very healthy place to hang around. No kidding, Shada said. Let's go catch Solo before he gets away. And then, from behind her, a sweaty hand closed on her wrist. Well, 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 what have we here? Shada turned. The sweaty hand belonged to a sweaty Imperial colonel, his uniform streaked with sandy dust, a maliciously pleased look on his face. Behind him were the two stormtroopers who'd come through earlier. Brea and Senni Tawnica, I do believe, the colonel went on. How nice of you to drop back into sight again. You can't imagine how broken-hearted Grand Moff Argon has been since your departure. I'm sure he'll be pleased to see you again. He lifted an eyebrow. as well as the 25,000 you stole from him. Smiling sardonically, he gestured to the stormtroopers. Take them away. The police station cell was cooler than the cantina had been, but that was about all it had going for it. Small, sparsely furnished, streaked with Tatooine's ubiquitous sand, it had all the charm of a used transport crate. Did you catch when they'd be moving us out? Caroli was leaning against a wall, gazing dolefully at the door. Didn't sound like it would be any time soon, Shaeta said. The colonel said something about finishing up the search before getting us transferred to his ship. Caroli's lip twitched. Clearly, she was also appreciating the irony here. The Imperial search had already ended, only they didn't know it. Or maybe they did know it. Maybe the colonel was just playing along with the masquerade while he sent out for the proper interrogation equipment. Shaeta looked around the room. A single bunk, a reading lamp fastened to the wall over one end, primitive restroom facilities, a barred door, and a one-way observation window opposite it. Limited resources and no privacy to use them, which left only their combat training. And the possibility that the Imperials still didn't know they were dealing with Mistral. I just hope they feed us before then, she commented to Caroli. I'm starving. Caroli's eyebrow twitched. So am I. She looked around. Maybe I should beat on the bars and see if I can get someone's attention. Go ahead. Shaeta stretched out on the bunk and let her hand rest idly on the reading lamp above her head, examining it with her fingertips. It was fastened to the wall over the bunk, but a little work with her belt buckle ought to get it off. Behind it would be power cables. On second thought, you might want to try that mirror instead, she said to Caroli, nodding back at the spy window. Someone's probably watching it. Okay, Caroli said. She stepped over to the window and pressed her face against it, blocking the view into the cell. Hey! Anyone there? Quickly, Shaeta pulled off her buckle and got to work, as Caroli kept up the noise. She got one of the three fasteners loosened, did the second, started on the third. Shut up the noise! Someone snapped. Shaeta paused, palming the buckle, as a man in a faded uniform appeared at the door. We're hungry, she complained. Too bad, he growled. The meal's come in 2 hours. Now shut up, or I'll have you strapped down and muzzled. 2 hours? We'll never make it that long. Can't you get us something to tide us over? Please? Caroli added, smiling encouragingly. The guard's lip twisted, and he was just opening his mouth for what would probably have been a memorable comeback when a young man in civilian clothing stepped into view. Problems, Happer? Always. I thought you were off till tonight. I am, the younger man said, peering thoughtfully at Shaeta and Caroli. Heard you were drowning in prisoners. Figured I'd come in and take a look. Who do we have here? Brea and Seni Tawnica. Happer threw a glower at the two women. Very special prisoners of Colonel Park. And none of our business, if you ask me. If the Imperials want to lock up half of Mos Eisley, the least they could do is provide their own holding tanks. And do their own ID checks? Don't remind me. I got 15 of them running right now, with about 30 more in the hopper. Happer glared again at the prisoners. Look, Reach, do me a favor, will you? Go down to stores and pull a couple of ration bars for these two. I've got to go down to the check room. The sifter's been needing a lot of babysitting today, and those stormtroopers are starting to get snotty. I'll handle it, Reach assured him. Have fun. Happer grunted and disappeared down the corridor. So, Reej said, gazing at them again. Brea and Seni, which is which? I'm Brea, Shaeta said carefully. There was something about the way he was looking at her that she didn't at all care for. Ah, I'm Reej Windward. You know, I could have sworn I heard you two had gotten on a transport heading out toward Jabba the Hutt's 3 hours ago. Shaeta's heart seemed to seize up inside her. The Tawnica sisters were here,
on Tatooine. We came back, she said through suddenly dry lips. I guess we shouldn't have. I guess not. I heard something else interesting, too. Just after this big Imperial droid search came down all over Mos Eisley a couple of days ago. It seems the Empire has also put out an urgent search and detain order for a stolen strike cruiser. A strike cruiser. Shada put as much scorn as she could into her voice. Oh, I'm sure. People steal strike cruisers all the time. Yeah, I thought that sounded pretty strange myself. So I went over and talked to a pal of mine at the control tower to see if that was even possible. You know what he told me? I'm dying to hear. He said he'd picked up something sneaking in toward the Dune Sea an hour or so before that Star Destroyer showed up and all these Imperials dropped in on us. Something just about the size of a strike cruiser. Rij lifted his eyebrows. Interesting. Wouldn't you agree? Tremendously. Shada was fighting to keep her sudden dread out of her voice. So they had spotted the strike cruiser after all, and Kai was in big trouble. Were the Imperials pleased to hear this? Actually, he hasn't told them yet. Rij eyed her closely. He was going off duty at the time and didn't feel like holding a question session with a bunch of stormtroopers. Of course, once they came down in force and took over the tower, he was even less inclined to remember stuff like that. That happens on Tatooine. I see, Shada murmured. They were still in trouble, but at least they still had a little breathing space. You'll forgive me if lost Imperial property isn't high on my list at the moment. We have more pressing problems of our own. I'm sure you do, Rij said solemnly. Number one being, how to get out of here before Happer finds out you aren't Brea and Senni Tonika. Shada felt herself tense up again. She'd suspected he knew, but had been hoping fervently that she was wrong. That's ridiculous. It's all right. The microphones in this cell haven't worked in 3 months. I popped out the circuit fuse a few minutes ago, too, just to make sure. Shada glanced at Caroli. She looked as puzzled as Shada felt. All right, she said, looking back at Rij. Fine. Let's cut through the smoke here and tell us what you want. Rij seemed to brace himself. I'll let you out. In exchange for some of whatever's in that strike cruiser. Shada frowned at him. What are you doing? Running a smuggling service on the side? Not smuggling, he shook his head. Information to certain interested parties. What parties? It's not important, Rij smiled faintly. On Tatooine, one normally doesn't ask that question. Yes, well, we're new here. Shada countered, thinking hard. This could be an Imperial trick, she knew. A way to get her and Caroli to tell them where they'd hidden the hammer tongue. But somehow, that seemed a little too subtle for people who owned interrogator droids and normally had no compunction about using them. All right, she said, but only if you can find us a freighter that can handle something 3 by 5 meters. Rij frowned. Hey, Rij! Happer called from down the corridor. Gotta go! Something big brewing over at Docking Bay 97. The Imperials have called the whole duty force in to run backup. Can you watch things here a while? Sure, no problem, Rij assured him. Thanks! Happer ran off, his footsteps cut off by the boom of a closing security door. Well, Shada prompted. I can get a freighter, Rij said, his forehead wrinkled in thought. The problem's going to be getting it fast enough. There's a sandstorm sweeping in across that part of the Dune Sea. A big one. It'll hit in a couple of hours, and there's a good chance it'll bury your ship for good. Then we haven't got much time, have we? Shada said. Get us out of here, and let's go. The wind was already picking up across the sand dunes as Rij set the transport ship awkwardly down at the edge of the makeshift tunnel leading to the strike cruiser. How long have we got? Shada shouted to be heard over the wind as the three of them half walked, half slid their way down the sand to the hatchway.
Not long, Reege called back. Half an hour, maybe less. Shada nodded back, keying the panel open and stepping inside. On the deck, just inside the hatchway, lay the segment of the hammer tongue they'd removed, its load lifters still attached. Across the huge, empty room, D4 was warbling to himself as he poked around the rest of the huge cylinder, searching for any last-minute bits of data he could add to his extensive technical readout of the device. There was no sign of Kai. Kai? Shada called. Damala Sitrisor Kehai! Shamati! Kai emerged from hiding behind one of the support struts, holstering her blaster. I was starting to think you weren't going to make it back in time. We may not have, Shada said grimly. We've got another sandstorm breathing down our necks. There's a transport outside. You and Karoli get that Hammertongue segment aboard. Right, Kai said. Karoli, grab the lifts on that end. Together, they got the Hammertongue segment off the floor and out the hatchway as Shada went forward to the strike cruiser's cockpit. As it had before, the flying sand was interfering with the sensors, and she had to adjust the fine-tuning several times before she was able to get a good view. As far as she could tell, there were no longer any Star Destroyers over Tatooine. They must have assumed their escaped prisoners had already made it off-planet. Keying off, she headed back to where Reege was crouched beside the end of the Hammertongue cylinder, his face pressed close to one of the openings. So, there it is, she said. What do you think? He looked up at her, his face pasty white. Do you know what you have here? Do you have any idea? Not really. Do you? Look here. He pointed to a plate. See? DS Mark II, Module 7, Prototype B, Eloy Lemelisk. I see it. What does it mean? Reege straightened up. It means this is part of the prototype superlaser for the Death Star. Shada stared at him, a shiver running up her back. What's a Death Star? The Emperor's latest grab for power, like nothing you've ever seen. Reege looked back along the Hammertongue's length. And we've got a piece here of its main weapon. A piece? Shada frowned, following his gaze. A solid 200 meters of laser? You mean this isn't all of it? I don't think so, Reege said. Module 7, remember? He looked at Shada sharply. I've got to have that piece you cut off. It's absolutely vital. Forget it. If this really is a weapon, my people can find a better use for it than you can. We'll pay you anything you want. I said, forget it, Shada said again, brushing past him. Kai was going to need help, and abruptly, she was spun back around by a hand on her arm. Reflexively, she reached up to break his grip. She froze, staring at the blaster that had appeared from nowhere in Reege's hand. Is this how you keep your bargains? You have to let us have it. Please, we need to know everything we can about the Death Star. Why? He swallowed hard. Because we're likely to be its first target. Shada stared at him. Tatooine was going to be the first target? Ridiculous. And then, suddenly, it fell into place. You're with the Rebel Alliance, aren't you? He nodded. Yes. Shada focused on the blaster in his hand. And this thing is important enough to you to kill me in cold blood? He took a deep breath, let it out in a hissing sigh. No, not really. I didn't think so.
Mishkam!
And in the blink of an eye, it was all over. Kai, coming in from behind the Hammertongue, had Reege's blaster, and Reege. What do you want me to do with him? She handed the blaster to Shada. Shada looked at Reege, half bent over in Kai's grip. Let him go. He can't stop us now. Anyway, he's sort of on our side. If you say so. Kai released her hold on his arm. We're ready to go, as soon as you are. All right. Shada pursed her lips. Reege, can you beat the storm in that airspeeder you had aboard the transport? He nodded. If I can get going in the next few minutes. Fine. Kai, get it unloaded. And then you or Karoli get D4 aboard and get the ships ready to fly.
Got it.
With one last look at Reege, Kai headed for the hatchway. Reege was still standing there, looking at her. I'm sorry the deal's fallen through. Shada was trying to ignore the pang of guilt twisting through her stomach. He'd risked a lot for them, and it looked like he was going to wind up with nothing. Look, if you can get back in here after the storm, you're more than welcome to what's left of the Hammer Tongue. Let me make you a counteroffer, Reach said. Join us. You've already said we're on the same side. Shada shook her head. We're barely making it ourselves. We don't have the time or the resources to take on the galaxy's problems, not now. If you wait too long, there may not be anyone left to fight with you. I understand, she said. I guess it's a chance we'll have to take. Goodbye, and good luck. The sand was shaking the transport's hull by the time Shada finished double-checking the Hammer Tongue's restraints and made it back up to the bridge. We all set? She asked Caroli as she strapped herself in. Yes. Reach get off all right? Shada nodded. Looks like just in time, too. Caroli threw her a sideways look. I'm not sure it was such a good idea to let him go. If we start killing anyone who gets in our way, we're no better than any other mercenaries. Besides, he doesn't like the Empire any more than we do. The comm pinged.
I'm ready, said Kai.
Same here, Shada told her. Is D4 all settled in?
D4?
Kai echoed.
Didn't Caroli take him?
I thought you had him, Caroli said. For a long moment, she and Shada just stared at each other. Then, with a muttered curse, Shada jabbed at the comm panel. Reesh! Reesh! Come in. There was a hiss of sand-driven static, and then the other's voice came faintly over the speaker.
This is Reesh. Thanks for the loan of your droid. I'll leave him with the Bothan Shipping Company on Pirokit. You can have him back when you return the freighter.
He was gone.
You want me to go after him?
Kai asked. D4, with a complete technical readout on the Hammer Tongue. No, Shada told her, smiling in spite of herself at Reach's ingenuity. No, it's all right. We owe him that much. And if he's right, he and his friends are going to need all the help and information they can get. Her smile faded. DS Mark II, the plate on the Hammer Tongue had said. Death Star? Mark II, perhaps? A second generation of this thing Reach was so afraid of? It could be. And if so, the Mistral might have to seriously consider that offer to join up with the Rebel Alliance. And if not all of the Mistral, perhaps Shada would do so on her own. Maybe there she would find something she could truly believe in. But in the meantime, she had a package to deliver. Fire up the repulsor lifts, she told the others. Let's go home. This is Laura Esterman. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, Hammer Tongue, The Tale of the Tanika Sisters by Timothy Zahn. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Hoel. Hammer Tongue is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1994, all rights reserved. Hammer Tongue is included in the short story collection entitled Star Wars, Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina, published by Bantam Books.